Hi, everyone, and welcome to Take 10 for Torah, number 960. I hope you all are well. Any questions, comments, suggestions, recommendations, or sponsorships, please email me at rabbiismach@taketenfortorah.org. I'd like to finish the second half of the Haggadah, the 10-minute Maggid, which I guess adds to the 20-minute Maggid, but who's counting? So yesterday we got up to the second half of the Maggid section, and Mitchila of the Avodah Zarah, we discussed, begins the opinion of Rav, who says that we're supposed to be focusing on the story about how we were once upon a time pagans and idol worshippers and polytheists, etc. But then God showed himself and displayed his might, his involvement in the universe, theism, not deism. That's what we learned in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And then we discussed, we moved on into Baruch Shomer Haftachasol Yisrael, that God kept his promise then and keeps his promise in the future to always be, so to speak, the Shomer Amo Yisrael La'ad, always to watch over the Jewish people, b'hisha amda lavoseinu, and this is what has stood for us, that has allowed us to stand, to exist, to remain, all throughout the generations, even though b'chol dor v'dor there are enemies. Now again, we're singing because of the fact that God will always be there. We're not singing because of the fact that b'chol dor v'dor there are people who want to destroy us. That would be awkward. Okay, moving right along, Tsei Ulamad. This is brand new, Tsei Ulamad. Go out and learn. So the continuity here is interesting. This might be a new thing, or it might be because Tsei Ulamad, you know, a brand new thing, go out and let's discuss something else for now. Or it might just be continuity of discussion of anti-Semitism, or different types of anti-Semitism. We just referred to the promise of God protection, and the promise of God protection in spite of all of those threats. And so let's discuss and contrast two of those threats. We talk about Lavan, we talk about Paro. Now it's interesting that in this paragraph, if you read it, you can talk about this at your Seder, it kind of sounds like it's making Lavan out to be the bad guy and Paro out to be the good guy, but you know, there are a variety of answers to that question, but it's something which you might want to discuss. But again, it's talking about these two different models of anti-Semitism: Paro, who wanted to destroy the boys, Lavan, who wanted to destroy everybody, as it's understood. And just so you know, Mabi Kesh Lavan Ho'arami is the interpretation of this section of the Haggadah, but really, the source pasuk, which I'll discuss in a moment, might not even be referring to Lavan at all. There are other opinions that say it's referring to something else. What am I talking about? So we proceed to do over here for the next couple of pages of your Haggadah is delve into a section of Sefer Devarim, which is Perek Chavav Pasuk Aleph. It begins the discussion of a person who one day will bring Bikurim, first fruits, to Israel. Again, this presentation was given to the Jews before they entered Israel, and they're being told when you bring subsequently your first fruits in, so this is what you're going to do. You're going to tell over the story of how we got here. So now, the reason this is so significant is because, although, yeah, we could have really delved into the entire discussion that the Torah has the first time these events occurred in the beginning of Sefer Shemos, but we don't. We wait till the repetition of this story, so to speak. God puts into our mouths a repetition of the story that we're supposed to use as liturgy when we bring the first fruits. So that is what we delve into, because this retelling of the story, right, this God's retelling of the story is what's specifically important for us. And really, I mean, the retelling was delivered by Moshe, but through God, that is what is worth delving into tonight at the Seder. And so it's a sequence of psukim. Does not discuss all the psukim, but it's a sequence of psukim in Perek Chavav. You could go take a look, chapter 26 in Devarim. We go through Pasuk He through Pasuk Ches. Okay, with Pasuk He through Pasuk Ches. And all of the drashos I'm actually going to leave out. I'm not going to discuss any of this in depth. They're all interesting. The language that's used to describe these things, Shenemar, Kemosh Shenemar, what is sort of understood, what we bring as a proof, which interpretations of these psukim are brought here. It's all fascinating discussion. Unfortunately, we kind of like go a little bit quickly through this part of the Haggadah because it seems more technical, but honestly, there's a lot of richness to it in understanding the story. Because remember, this is the story that is retold, that we're supposed to retell it, how we're supposed to retell it. Not only that, but whoever wrote the Haggadah included the particular midrashim and understandings of this retelling, and why those and not others is also something which is worth to be discussed. So towards the end of this, it talks about how God took us out, Yad HaChazaka, and Ba'osos of Amosim, with all of these signs. And that's why we then get into the discussion about the Makos. Because we were referring to these psukim, Arami Ovidavi. The Mishnah itself tells us we're supposed to be delving into these psukim. And so it ends with these Makos. And we talk about the Makos. Of course, you know, we dip our finger into the wine. We take a little bit out. And many understand that to imply our lack of happiness at others being punished, even based on what they did to us. We'd rather, you know, everybody just get along, and we don't, we take out that drop of wine to diminish our happiness. And then we have Rabbi Yehuda Simanim. Rabbi Yehuda Simanim takes us into a new part. Rabbi Yehuda says, by the way, once we're talking about the Ten Commandments, so, I'm sorry, not Ten Commandments, Ten Makos, once we're talking about the Ten Makos, so we have an acronym here. Now, the acronym is not rocket science, right? Just making an acronym out of something. But in many ways, the Tzach, Adash, and Ba'achav, the three different groupings that we have, the Makos, these groupings are very deeply symbolic. They were different in different areas of how the Egyptians were hit. There's a pattern to these three, and he wants us to point out the pattern. I'm sure your Haggadah will have something on this pattern, why this pattern is significant. He's not just showing us an acronym, he's showing us a pattern. Then we shift into, once we're talking about the Makos, how bad were the Makos really? The traditional explanation of why we talk about this, how bad were the Makos? Was it 100, 200, 150, 250, all these numbers about exactly how many plagues? It's still the 10 plagues, but it's sort of how doubled and tripled and compounded they were. Why are we talking about this? So the classic answer is because we want to be able to understand exactly what we will not get. All of the things the Torah says that Egypt got, we will never get. Okay, so we want to know all of the things. I won't put any of those things on you. But what I'd like to suggest is that really it introduces the next paragraph. We talk about Makos and we talk about all the bad things that happened to our enemies. We break it down to really appreciate not only all of the things that we won't get, but all of the things that God did in our favor. And so then we enter into Dayenu, which is beautiful, and I always talk about Dayenu, and I've talked about it in Take 10s in the past couple of weeks. Dayenu allows us to take this big, huge story and break it down into its component parts. And so what we've been doing in the last paragraphs, in regard to the Makos, the bad that was done to the Egyptians, now we're doing to the good that was done to us. So much so that after we break it down into these 15 lines, this huge story, then now we appreciate all of the details of Alachas Kama Vakama Tova Kafula Umechupela Aslamakom Aleinu. How much more so indebted manifold bounties, Kafula Umechupelas, doubled and quadrupled exponential gratitude that comes out of this exercise of Dayenu, of focusing not just on the big story, but on the details that make it up. And so we do this for the Makos to understand the bad, we do this at Dayenu to understand the good, and then finally we get to the end of Magid. Now the end of Magid is really important because Rabbi Gamliel, as is quoted in the Haggadah, says, Kol shalom amar shlosha dvar me'elu v'pesach lo yotzei yedei chavaso. Anybody who does not discuss these three things has not fulfilled their obligation. Which obligation are we talking about? Good question. But has not fulfilled some sort of obligation. And these three are the things, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. So we then go into each one of them individually. Now it's interesting because we don't have a lot of holidays where we're really asked to delve into the meaning, the reason, the understanding behind the mitzvos. But here we are. And we start with Pesach. Why do we do Pesach? We have nothing to point to, unfortunately, because there is no Korban Pesach over here. Because Pesach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Abatei Avoseinu B'Mitzrayim. Pesach is because God passed over our homes. Shenemar, as it says, and quotes a whole pasuk that discusses how that happened. Now, this is really interesting. You could talk about this forever. You know, why Pesach and why the Makas Bechoros, the last Makkah, required our involvement. We had to bring this Korban. We had to put dam, blood on the Mashkof, on the doorposts, to make sure that, you know, we wouldn't be involved. You know, it sounds like nine of the Makos. Okay, you know, you could just sit there and enjoy and you don't have to actively participate to defend yourselves. On the 10th, there is something that we need to do. And the Korban Pesach was part of us needing to dig in and to do something. But there's a lot to talk about over here. Matzah as well. Matzah here. Why do we eat matzah? And it says, because Shelo Hispik B'Tekum Shelo Abaseinu L'Hachmetz, because we got out too quickly. And a couple days ago, I referred to the conflict within matzah. Is matzah representing redemption or is matzah representing poverty? L'Achma'anya, the bread of a poor person. It's not so simple. Here it seems to be representing geula and redemption. And then finally, marar, we say because vayimaru es chayayim, our lives were embittered. Now it's fascinating that the marar comes last, right? Because the marar really came first. First came the bitterness, and then comes the Pesach, and then comes the matzah. Why does marar go last? And it could be, there are a lot of different suggestions. Take a look at the bottom of your Haggadah. A lot of people wonder about this, but it could be because the marar is not yet over. The Mara has not yet concluded. Perhaps for whatever reason that we got out of Egypt, maybe early, there's still V'hisha Amda Lavoseinu, B'chol Dar V'Dar Omdim Aleinu L'chaloseinu. It's inappropriate, it's wrong to think that the Mara has completely stopped. The Mara goes on and the Mara therefore is last. Finally, we have this last paragraph, a beautiful paragraph, B'chol Dar V'Dar Chayav Adam L'Rosas Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatzim Mitzrayim. We have to imagine ourselves, later on it says, Afo Sanu Go'ali Mohem, that we were there. The Rambam points out, or at least the Rambam's language is, Chayav Adam Laharos, the person has to show themselves as if they are gone. They have to go through the trappings. They have to play act in some sort of way. In some communities, some of the custom to actually literally walk around the table with matzah over their shoulder, etc. And this is the Haggadah. At the end, we have Lefikach, which has all the expressions, which is a gush of reverence, a gush of emotion, of expression of gratitude. Finally, the brachos that begin the Hallel, and then the end of Magid. Drink up and have a chag, kasher, v'sameach.